four cases on the calendar this morning. Case from the Court of Federal Claims, tax case. Case from the Court of International Trade, obviously a trade case. Government employee cases from the Merit Systems Protection Board, one of which is being submitted on the briefs and therefore not being argued, and the other of which is our first case. Knight versus the MSPB, James Knight. 06-34-27. Mr. Lewis.
Police, Your Honor.
Police, sorry.
It's okay. Good morning, judges. My name is Mike Elise Bamberson. I represent, for the court, I've reserved five. My name is Mike Elise. I represent Mr. Knight. The case actually came out of TSA as opposed to MSPB. It was dismissed by the MSPB judges, both at the ALJ level and also at the MSPB level. I'm going to get right to the issue. The issue is whether the MSPB had jurisdiction over this case. The statute is pretty clear. A competitive employee is allowed, it must serve a probationary period of 1 year. A non-competitive exempt employee per statute must serve two. Mr. Knight served approximately 22 months, just shy of 2 years. He was dismissed. I'm not going to get into it. It's non sequitur.
That's less than 2 years, and of course that also is counting his temporary appointment. And does that not count?
It does count. And I'll tell you why, Judge. Based on a conversion letter the TSA sent to Mr. Knight or required him to sign 12-12-03, I referred to it at page 8 of my brief. I don't have an appendix site. If it's not, we filed a joint appendix. If it's not in there, it's certainly in the record below. The letter is crystal clear.
That seems to be rather important to your case.
Yes, it is. The letter, I referred to it, and I'm not going to read the brief. I'll read the language of the letter. You are being effectively converted to a permanent appointment from my non-competitive temporary appointment. By that wording, he was converted to a competitive service and non-temporary.
When did that occur?
That occurred 12-12-03. And that still did not give, he was terminated or discharged even less than a year later. But the letter goes on and it specifically says that his 1 year supervisory probationary period is retroactive effectively for 1 year and his prior service counts. So he served the year, so he's no longer a probationary employee, which means he's entitled to a hearing. The TSA at the time and the MSPB now argues that there's a jurisdictional issue because the SF-50, I think the confusion here is that the SF-50, I think you guys have to do them too. Anybody who's a government employee gets an SF-50 at some point, which is...
This one is assuming, yes. Assuming you're correct on that, you still, as Judge Lurie suggested at the opening of your argument, you still don't need the 2 year requirement.
I don't have to. We don't have to. He was converted to a competitive employee. The statute requires 1 year for competitive employees. 75-1-1. The government keeps referring to 75-1-1 for exempt. Non-competitive. Yes, that's 2 years. The statute has two parts. One is competitive, 1 year probationary period. We submit that that's what the TSA was doing here. They converted him from non-competitive temporary to competitive permanent. The statute for competitive permanent, 75-1-1, specifically says for competitive, 1 year probationary period. If the court is confused as to whether the 75-1-1 1 year period applies, the letter of correspondence, the conversion letter, clearly states, I am obligated to satisfactorily complete a 1 year supervisory manageable probationary period.
What exactly are you reading from?
I'm reading from the conversion letter. And the only reference I have is page 8 of my brief. I don't know what the appendix is. It was a joint appendix, and I assume it's in there. I apologize to the court.
Mr. Lewis, you're arguing the criticality of one document and you can't point to it.
I'm sorry, Judge. I thought it was in the appendix. It's certainly...
The document you have, does it have a number at the bottom of it?
No, it's not in there in their brief. You're looking at their brief. No, it's not.
No, I'm trying to look at the appendix.
I don't know. I'm going to have to file a supplement to say. It certainly was in the record below the judge. And it was my understanding it was in the appendix. And yes, it is critical to the case because it states point blank, this individual has been converted, and they give him a one-year supervisory probationary period, and they make it retroactive. And I don't know how we got here, to be honest.
What's the date of that document again?
12, it's undated, it's a TSA letter. However, the employee's signature is 12-12-03.
And the only appendix that I have, and listen, I have your brief.
Correct, that's not in there.
And then I have the government brief.
Right, and there was
that has documents attached to it.
Right, and there was an appendix file that was supposed to be, we were supposed to file an appendix as well. And then ours didn't get in, and we were reminded by the court that it didn't get in. So rather than I motioned the court to adopt their appendix as ours.
I was under this, what the attachments to this?
When I looked at it downstairs, Judge, it wasn't in the red binder, it was in the blue binder. It was blue bound, so maybe you guys don't have it either.
The only document that I have was your brief and the red brief with the attachments to the red brief.
The only suggestion I have then is maybe go find it. It certainly is part of the record.
It's not a requirement for us to go find it. It's a requirement for you to submit all of the documents that you rely on.
And I thought I did, Your Honor. I thought I did. It certainly is part of the record. I mean, I wouldn't have referred to it in my brief.
What kind of a way is that before a court to go find it?
Not very good. And honestly, it.
You're saying just finally it's dated what, Mr. Wilson?
It's a two-page document from TSA. There's a signature on the back page of Mr. James Knight, who's my client here, and there's a handwritten date of 12-12-03, and it's entitled Voluntary Employee Request for Conversion to Permanent Appointment. And if I will go downstairs at the close of this argument and file a supplement with the court, or otherwise file it if it's not in there. I will say, however, it certainly was part of the record below and is part of the record here, and you're right. I'm derelict in not getting it to you. But the government was aware of it. You brought it to their attention. The lower courts were aware of it. It's determinative of the outcome.
All right. Anything more? Or can we save that time? Let's see what the government has to say.
That's it. Thank you, Judge.
Do you have any comments about this missing critical document?
No, I don't, Your Honor. I'm not aware of the document, and I'm pretty thoroughly reviewed the record. And if it was in the record, it would be rare for me to have missed such an important document. The initial decision did not refer to it, and no one has seen it. And I believe if that had been brought to the administrative judge's attention, or the board's attention for that matter, then someone would have referred to it. This is my first time hearing of that document. And I can't say never is not in the record, but it would be very, very unusual for a document to turn up at court, at oral argument. And we've had three different stages at which that document could have been reviewed, and no one knows anything about it.
In other words, the board
to my knowledge, it is not in the record. To my knowledge, the board did not refer to it in its opinion. To my knowledge, the administrative judge didn't refer to it in his opinion either.
Is there any other appendix aside from the appendix that's included in the red brief?
There is a court. There's an administrative record. And what we do is we go through the administrative record rather thoroughly and pull out those documents.
I understand that. My question is there another appendix to this case?
None that I'm aware of.
Other than the one that's in the red brief?
None that I'm aware of. Mr. Knight's attorney, to my knowledge, did not submit a brief, and then he said that he was going to adopt, the brief that we, the appendix that we filed. It was not originally filed as a joint appendix. We filed our own appendix, and this is my first time hearing about such a letter.
So is it your view that it has to be 2 years? requirement, not the one, because there was no evidence that he was subject to only a one-year requirement.
That is correct, Your Honor. And the statute is specific. As a non-preference eligible, he has to have 2 years of current continuous service. And I want to point out that in his brief, he did refer to the letter that's at our appendix at number 108, in which he requested reconsideration of the termination. And at one point, he was using that to make up the 2 years. However, the letter itself does not say that the termination was voided in any way. And so the termination that
that's
was
the February 05 letter.
I'm sorry, sir.
Is that the February 05 letter?
Yes, sir.
So he's saying that is when the termination occurred.
No, and that is incorrect. If that was when the termination occurred, that letter would have had to say, your termination is effective on the date. He already had an effective date of his termination of October the 7th, 2004. That letter made no reference to any different termination date. And even if the letter had said, your termination date, or we're going to reinstate you as of February, then you have a void in terms of he's not on the roads for the 2 years during the time between October the 7th, 2004, and the date of that letter. So he still would not have the 2 years that the statute requires him to be an employee in order to have an appeal right to the board.
Does his temporary appointment time benefit?
We don't think so, but even if he was hired December the 1st, 2002, he was discharged effective October the 7th, and even if you take the time that he served as a temporary person, he still would not have the 2 years required.
His argument before this morning was temporary times and the date of termination was February 05.
That is correct.
And so that is more than 2 years. So he would need both the benefit of both of those findings.
Well, he would need to have been on the roads as an employee for 2 years. And what I was saying is that if his termination date was effective October the 7th, 2004, and he got a letter February 2005, he would have had to been on the roads a particular time after October 7th, 2004, in order to make up the 2 years, even if you included the time when he was initially hired on December the 1st in a temporary position. And the letter to which he refers is at our appendix 108, made no mention of any retroactive placing him on the rolls, and made no mention of him being terminated as of February the 28th. And so his effective date of termination remains October the 7th, 2004, short of the 2 years. Now, as to the letter that he refers to, this is my first time hearing the letter. And you know, I can never say never, but I will say that the administrative judge had an opportunity to look at the record. There was no mention of it in the administrative judge's initial decision. The board revised the administrative judge's initial decision to take advantage of a new decision that it had issued subsequent, and it made no mention of it. And even if he had brought forth that letter at that time, and when he filed a petition for review, he would have had to show that that evidence was not available to him earlier, because you just can't come into a petition for review stage with new evidence that was available to you for which you did not submit. And I would submit to this court that since that was not referred to in his document at all, the theory on which he wrote his brief was completely different. So is there a letter that he somehow would have found somewhere? This is my first time hearing that. I answered the brief that he wrote.
But wouldn't the action that was taken by the letter have to be at least documented by an SF-50 sometime?
I would think so, Your Honor.
Isn't that the standard procedure?
Yes, that is the standard procedure.
Personal action would have to be recorded by an SF-50. Is there an SF-50 in the file to reflect that?
Are you referring to reflecting the letter that he refers to? No, sir, there isn't, not to my knowledge.
Because as far as I know, the file only has, the appendix only has two SF-50s.
And those are the only FF...
RA-75 and RA-76.
And those are the only two SF-50s that I am aware of.
So there was no conversion of that letter into an SF-50 form?
None that I'm aware of, Your Honor. And I would say again that Mr. Knight was required to meet the 2-year minimum employment to be an employee. And even if you take his time as a temporary employee, he does not meet the 2 years, and therefore the board does not have jurisdiction. The board's jurisdiction is not preliminary. We have the jurisdiction that's given to it by statute, and the statute specifically said 2 years. And I just point out that in Mr. Knight's brief, he did make some mention of the timeliness. The timeliness issue is not before the court because the administrative judge did not address it because he was dismissing the case on jurisdictional grounds. And should this honorable court see fit to disagree with the board's decision, then the timeliness issue is still a viable issue that the board would need to deal with. And I would say that the board did not have jurisdiction over Mr. Knight's case, and we believe that the decision of the board should be affirmed. Unless you have additional questions. Thank you very much.
Just real quick on whether...
Let me ask you a question on this. Because, you know, we have been thrown a little bit off balance here by this document. Now, you go to page 8 of your brief.
Correct.
And it seems to me a lot puzzled by this. It says, finally, concerning the issue of competitor accepted service, counsel for the agency, okay, asserts that Mr. Knight was in a non-competitive position when terminated, right? Then goes on, such assertions, albeit raised for the first time on appeal, are in contradiction to the correspondence that converted Mr. Knight to a permanent employee.
That's what I'm talking
about. You're saying they raised it for the first time on appeal, but how could you say that they have raised it, because your brief was filed before their brief? Saying that they raised it for the first time on appeal. You're saying the government, MSPB, Ms. Reardon, raised it for the first time on appeal. Your brief was filed February 21. Her brief was filed June 11th. So how?
I think raised on appeal below at the board level. It was not.
Yeah, but we have to. I mean, this looks like it was more appropriate in the brief below.
Correct.
Here, I mean, that's the problem. Is that
nonetheless, Your Honor? That's. I want to go right to that point, though. That's the paragraph that I talked about. Counsel said, and everybody's saying they've heard about this missing document for the first time. Well, that paragraph. That's what we're addressing. That competitive service. That correspondence that converted him is the exact document.
The other thing, I do think it's fair to say if you read your brief, I mean, in going over the case and preparing for argument today, it seemed to me that the two contentions were being advanced. One, your argument based on the February 28, 2005 term letter.
I'll withdraw that.
And then your time on this issue, it's very hard to discern from reading the brief the contention that we're hearing today.
The timeliness issue has to deal with whether or not he was given appeal rights. And I understand what happened. The TSA, when they issued this termination letter, discharge letter, didn't think he had any appeal rights. They were looking at the SF-50. My contention is, the SF-50 at TSA, when it was put into the computer, whatever they did, we know they're computer generated now, whoever did it, whether it was a data entry person, whether it was a contractor with TSA, we don't know. That's the problem. We don't know what they were told. And your question was, where's this conversion letter compared to this data entry clerk? The conversion letter that I referred to at page 8 of my brief that everybody claims to have seen for the first time was there. However, I don't have a copy of it. But it is in the brief, and I submit the conversion letter specifically converted him exactly what it said, to a 1-year probationary period.
The mention of it is in the brief.
Correct.
But we don't have it as evidence.
Correct. As far as, also they did mention it in their brief, the conversion letter. So this letter is not.
Where is it in their brief?
They talk about the conversion, and honestly, Judge, I don't know whether they're talking about the SF-50 because they do have a different date. Mr. Knight's at page 15, Mr. Knight's temporary appointment was converted to an accepted appointment. So they knew there was a conversion.
That's the SF-50.
Correct.
RA-76.
But the SF-50...
That essentially makes the personnel change a record.
Correct. How personnel works, they send a letter over to whomever, and there's a conversion. The problem...
Well, the conversion is with this SF-50. It's not effective until the SF-50 is cut.
Correct. So the 12-3-03 date is consistent with the SF-50 of December 28th, 03. The question is, what did the agency intend at that point? We know that there's a data entry clerk entering accepted service, but that document that was referred to at page 8 clearly makes it a total conversion to competitive service. The problem with the case was it was dismissed. I was never given any discovery. I don't know what they meant by that letter. If I had been given the opportunity to submit, to engage in discovery and conduct depositions and find out who wrote the letter that clearly converted him to a permanent employee and to a competitive employee, allowing him a one-year probationary period and making it retroactive, maybe we wouldn't be here.
So, Mr. Willis, you say, though, I want to make sure I understand this, you're saying you're withdrawing the argument that is presented front and center in your brief about the February 28th document.
He didn't have 2 years, Judge, and I apologize for that.
Okay, so you agree that if the argument with respect to the missing document isn't accepted, you lose.
Correct.
Well, Mr. Molise, you said you wanted to, I think your words were, go downstairs and look for the document. You can make a motion by next Tuesday enclosing that document, pointing out how it was considered by the board. And we'll look at it. And the government didn't respond yet. If we think it creates a real issue, we'll ask the government to respond. And if not, is that acceptable to the government?
Yes, Sean, I guess it has to be if that's what the court wishes. Are you suggesting that we submit something to be here by Tuesday or after he submits here?
I'm suggesting that we will ask you for a response if we feel we need it.
Thank you.
If I may correct the record too, that it refreshed my recollection when I was downstairs months ago looking at the record. It wasn't an appendix. It was must have been the administrative record I was looking at, and I believe I did see it. So I want to correct the record there. Also, Judge, Monday's a holiday, and I'm traveling back to Florida. Is there any way I can get a couple extra days?
Today, Thursday?
Thursday, yes.
How long can today be?
Thank you.
Case will be taken down to the office.